now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Well, 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 good afternoon, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, helping you find your courage to reclaim that which has always been in you from the very beginning. I am Dr. James Houck, and if you'd like more information about me or if you want to leave me your comments about today's show, I invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's all one word right there. So www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And I also just want to remind you that these broadcasts are now podcasted in case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. So again, you can just do that through the website, or you know, if you happen to be, or I should say have a subscription to either Audible or Amazon Music, you can also download the podcast because they are available at both of those venues. So, overall, you know, welcome to the month of September. Here we are, and unbelievable that we got here, but coming into my favorite time of the year, fall. Now, I know we still have a couple more weeks of summer to get through. But if, you know, these next 2 weeks are going to be any indication of just June, July, and August, it's going to fly by. And before you know it, we will be smack dab at the beginning of autumn. So I just wanted to say, you know, just from the get-go that just, again, thank you for all your support over the past year. And I just also wanted to say that you also have an opportunity to also continue your support in other ways by becoming a monthly subscriber. Now, a subscription is not required to listen to my talk shows. It doesn't grant you any, you know, secret access to anything, but it is greatly appreciated. So just invite you to go to the website and click on the link and then choose any amount that you feel comfortable giving in your support. And again, I am very appreciative of that. So happy to be here with you today, each and every Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Standard Time. And so each and every week, these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of spirituality and our mental health. And so I always invite people to, if they want to call in to be part of the show, let me give you that number. It is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. And for any of you who are tuning in for the very first time, I just want to say welcome to the show. Just pretty much just would like to share with everybody from the beginning that, you know, it doesn't really matter who we are or where we were born or even into what family we were placed. Ours is a world full of relationships. Okay, and indeed, we are social beings who often spend our lives trying to make sense of our world, or, you know, by trying to find our place in the world. And as those social beings, it's often within the context of our relationships that we can experience tremendous suffering, pain, disappointment, frustration, confusion, and so forth. You know, from overt acts of betrayal and cruelty that somebody has inflicted on us or vice versa, to simply being in the wrong place at the wrong time, many people often bear the scars of physical, psychological, emotional, and even spiritual woundedness. And yet, ironically, just as we experience our woundedness in relationships, it's also within the context of healthier relationships that we can find our healing, our voice, our authenticity. And the difficulty then is often finding the courage to discover that which has always been in us. And by that I mean, let us now discover our gifts, our graces, our skills, and our uniqueness that we already come into the world with. It's what philosopher and Scottish Franciscan John Duns Scotus coined the phrase "hacheitas," or it is a thisness, a uniqueness about us. Because I am, a firm believer that we all come into this world with everything we need for ourselves and others. You know, but through our various experiences, we are tempted to give away those very best parts of ourselves, if not the whole part of ourselves, of that uniqueness or that thisness. And maybe, you know, as I find as I counsel people, they do so because perhaps they didn't feel as though they didn't live up to another person's expectation of them. Or perhaps, let's say, we would hide our uniqueness from others in order to survive an abuse. Or perhaps those aspects of ourselves that have been taken away from us, and we did not have the strength to fight that or feel like we could reclaim it. But either way, when we become aware that these things have taken place, it does take tremendous courage to reclaim who we are. But we can reclaim our voice, our uniqueness, our thisness. Franklin Delano Roosevelt was famous for saying that courage is not the absence of fear, but rather the assessment that something else is more important than fear. And this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about. And it really focuses on the integration of spirituality and our mental health. And it is within the context of relationships where this occurs. So thank you for tuning in today. And I am just thrilled to be sharing with you this particular topic. And just realize that, as we go about and hopefully through listening, through, these podcasts and so forth, that, we realize that we find a way, I should say, we find a way to find peace within ourselves, to find that healing that we are longing for, on a physical level, emotional, psychological, and even spiritual level, and just transform those wounds of pain and suffering into wounds of healing, grace, peace, and love. Okay. And it is within the context of these relationships that we find that we don't have to look too far to find our healing. Because the relationships just might be within our own families. It could be with the coworkers or our colleagues and friends. Because whenever we transform, we also transform others by our presence, grace, and understanding. And this is something that when I was teaching, something that I always stressed with my students who were training to become licensed therapists. And I would say, it is a tremendous thing to be able to just sit with another in their pain and in their suffering, in their misery, and not to spoil that space with a bunch of words, but just to sit there and hold that space for them. And allow the healing to begin. It's that being that exquisite witness of, this is something, you talk about a shared humanity. This is something that, everybody has in common. We have that capacity to be wounded. We have the capacity to wound, but we also have the capacity to love and to be that source of healing and grace in another person's life. But first and foremost, kindness and compassion begins with how we treat ourselves, okay? Because whenever we're compassionate with others, we then can be more compassionate with ourselves. And whenever we are more forgiving with ourselves, we can certainly be more forgiving with others. And when we're able to find that place where we can live in gratitude with ourselves, We then discover how this opens our hearts to see and live in gratitude with others. And transformation, first and foremost, begins with us. Well, as I said a little while ago, welcome to September. And just welcome to today's show. It is the alchemy of love that speaks to all, going beyond the five languages of love. And as I thought about this topic, and I'll share with you where, you know, the five languages of love actually come from and how far back that goes. But I just want to say a little something about the month of September in general, because I don't know if you've been able to or recently turn the calendar over and like, hey, there's September. But September is also Suicide Prevention Month. And an organization that I am part of and proud to be part of and been part of for many years is Give an Hour. Give an Hour. It's an organization that provides emotional and psychological resources, along with so much more, to active duty and retired military personnel, reservists, guardsmen, guardswomen, and their family. And during the month of September, they are promoting a campaign called Connect to Hope. Connect to Hope. And it has just multiple ways to learn and get involved. And you can go on their website. It's www.giveanhour, all one word, giveanhour.org. And you'll see all the information that you need with Connect to Hope. And you'll find resources for assessing mental health care, a toolkit for sharing your own Connect to Hope story, and openings to join in the network. And each and every one of us can play a role in becoming, you know, more knowledgeable about the signs of distress and prevention efforts. So again, that website is www.giveanhour.org. Well, with September being Suicide Prevention Month, if there is one aspect that survivors of loved ones who have completed a suicide, the one aspect that they struggle with the most, it's that it's hard to wrap their head and heart around the fact that the person never fully knew, fully understood, was ever able to fully grasp that they were loved and supported by so many people. And perhaps the person themselves never felt worthy of love, or even how they struggled with their own psychological, emotional, physical, and even spiritual woundedness that their families and loved ones never quite understood, you know, the depth of those wounds. Or perhaps they were at a loss as to what else they could have done to help. Okay, but still, one of the most common relationship issues in couples and individuals that they experience today is this ongoing struggle to express love in very intentional and meaningful ways to one another. Okay, and for example here, every couple and or individual that I have counseled, everyone wants to be in a relationship where they can show their spouses or partners or loved ones that they care about them. And many people also want to be in relationships where they can also receive that love from others. And this is only natural. Like I said, we are social beings. We are, you know, a part of the human race. We long for that emotional, psychological, physical, even spiritual connection. But how many times do we often feel like we're speaking different languages to one another? Not in a literal sense, like one person is speaking Portuguese and the other person is speaking Chinese, or, you know, nothing like that. But, you know, how often do we struggle to kind of tune into the same emotional wavelength as our spouses and partners and loved ones? You know, I would say quite a bit. And, you know, perhaps some of you are saying right now, well, every day I express my love and affection to my spouse, my partner, and my loved ones. And this is a very good thing. But yet, how many of us spend the time to check in with a loved one, a spouse, or a partner, just to make sure that what we say, or even how we say it, even how we express it in other ways, is in line with how, say, the other person would like to receive it. And I'm sure that at some point in our lives, we've all been there. Well, welcome to The Five Languages of Love. This was a book that was written by Dr. Gary Chapman, I believe it was 1992. And he's an author and also a counselor. And if you've never read it, highly recommend that you get it. It's been in print now for a while. And you can buy used copies, or you can, you know, buy the paperback version. Very, very inexpensive, but still very powerful. And the five languages of love, as he spells out in the book, are these. There's words of affirmation, you know, hearing that you are loved or appreciated, and you're also being told why you are loved and appreciated. And then there's physical touch, you know, receiving a hug or holding hands when you're out in public, or just, shall we say, snuggling together on the couch while you're watching a good movie. And then there's quality time, you know, doing activities together without our phones and really being present to one another, really listening to one another, just enjoying one another. And then there are gifts that some people's love language is, you know, just showing that thoughtfulness and putting some thought into those gifts, however big or small. And finally, there are acts of service. You know, such as like making the bed or cleaning the bathroom or even picking up the dry cleaning on your way home so that the other person won't have to. Now, I want to share a little caveat because we, you know, as I was talking about these, and we're going to go into the more details with these different love languages, you know, there are ones that really speak to us. You know, these are, you know, kind of like there's one out of the five that at least is our go-to that, you know, really connects with us. But as we also go down the list of the five, there's also one that really stands out for another person. Okay. And one of the things that when couples start, you know, working on their love languages together, I always have to tell them, like, okay, let's pump the brakes here, because it's really unrealistic to think that all we need to do to improve our relationships is for, you know, you and your spouse or partner or loved one can just relate to one another using the same love language. In other words, let's say, you know, wouldn't it be great if both of you, your love language was all about the physical touch, or maybe was all about receiving gifts, or maybe it was just, you know, spending time or the others. Okay. And that would be great. However, that is not the case because, you know, like I said, chances are that's not going to happen. Okay. Because we are diverse individuals. I mean, if our personalities are different, then certainly our love language is going to be different. And, you know, we all know that old saying where opposites attract. Well, this is the case here. It just seems like we have diversity. And it doesn't mean that one is better than the other or over against another, or one is more special than another. It's just finding the love language of ourselves and understanding that, and that's going to be our strength, but yet also discovering the love language of that very special person in your life. Like I said, a spouse, a partner, or even a dear loved one. Okay. And realize that, okay, this could be a stretch for us in terms of speaking their love language. For example, let's say that we, you know, really struggle with just showing thoughtfulness, you know, putting the thought in the gifts, or just gift giving in general, like, but yet that really connects with the other person. Well, what do we need to do? You know, is there a ways in which we can do this even through our personalities and so forth? Okay. But, getting back to, you know, wouldn't it be great if we all had the same love language? Well, in one sense, that's unrealistic because it's not going to happen. And in another sense, that would be boring, okay? Because, like I said, with, you know, the opposites attracting, you know, it's just not everybody is an introvert or not everybody is an extrovert, okay? And it is just how couples marvel at the fact that, yeah, they're drawn to one another, they're in love with each other, but yet they get frustrated because one's an introvert and the other's an extrovert. And not to take those differences personally, but just realize that that's part of diversity and it's part of the uniqueness in not only the person, but also what they bring to the marriage or they bring to that like couple's relationship. So before, you know, discovering each other's love language, you know, again, let's be honest here. We've probably had numerous misunderstandings that have just left us totally frustrated. But instead of, you know, discovering what love language speaks to yourself and the other person, yes, let's do that. And it's, there's a process to this as well. But then celebrate these differences. I mean, realize in what way the other person's love language is a stretch for you and which one takes very little effort on your part. So let's take a look at these in a little bit more detail, okay, and see which ones that you really connect with or if you are in a relationship with another person, a spouse or partner or so forth, see which ones that you think connects with them. Okay, so there's words of affirmation, all right? And in simple terms, words of affirmation, you know, that kind of love language is all about expressing affection through the words that we speak. You know, whenever we give that affirmation or we give that appreciation or a little bit of praise or encouragement or something like that. And when this is somebody's primary love language, you know, they enjoy kind words. They enjoy encouragement. They also enjoy, you know, little cute little quotes and love notes and cute text messages. You know, I've seen many a couple, and I've even done this sometimes, where it's just, you just write a cute little note and put it on like a post-it and just leave it where your loved one's going to see it. And I've also been around colleagues who would, you know, brown bag their lunch, so to speak. And then, you know, they would pull out a sandwich with a little post-it note on it saying, thinking of you today, miss you, or something like that. Something cute that, you know, again, it's the intimacy that's shared between the couple. And sure enough, that brought a smile to the person's face. Now, I don't know if they had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or if they had a hoagie or whatever. It didn't matter because that little note made their day. And in other ways, you can, you know, make a person's day by complimenting them or pointing out what they did well. I mean, how many times do we get caught up on, well, I'm going to need to point out what they're not doing right or correcting them? Okay. You know, that's, you know, so hopefully things can be corrected. But when you compliment somebody or just point out something simple like, hey, when you did that, I really appreciated it. That helped me out so much. And I just want to let you know that, you know, just I'm grateful that you did that. Right? I mean, it doesn't take any extra effort on our part, but just acknowledging, you know, through those words of affirmation or complimenting a person or even pointing out what they did well. Okay, so that's words of affirmation, all right? And then we come to quality time. And, you know, this love and affection, you know, these things are expressed through this kind of love language when another person gives someone else their undivided attention. And I tell you, this is an issue that has been coming up more and more and more between couples because, you know, with both parents or both the husband and wife or both partners working outside the home, you know, just because they got to do what they got to do and they enjoy doing the work. It's like they come home and there's other things to do, you know, such as meal preparation or, you know, homework with the kids or whatever. I get that. And their quality time is very, very limited before they have to go to bed and get up and do it all over again. Okay. So, you know, but it's, you know, when a person is so exhausted at the end of the day, you know, or frustrations are setting in, and then before you know it, the couple is spending that quality time arguing or fighting. And so let's say they have 3-4 hours, okay, let's be generous here. Let's say 5 hours, you know, of quality time in, you know, at the end of their day, whenever the end of the day is for them. But they spend 3 hours or 2 hours arguing, and that argument does not get resolved. Well, that just kind of like cuts their quality time in half. And then some. Okay. But if we make it a priority to, you know, let's say, well, we have to discuss what happened today or whatever, it's like, okay, give that an hour. And then, let's say, after dinner or even later in the evening, we're going to turn off the cell phones, we're going to turn off our tablets, we're going to make eye contact, and we're going to listen to one another and actively listen. And the people with this kind of love language that really, you know, speaks to them, I mean, they're looking for quality over quantity. Okay, so whenever, you know, you get together, the person feels loved if you are present and focused on them. You know, and making eye contact is, you know, key. And we also need to affirm what the other person is saying, you know, and especially resist the urge to offer advice or, you know, like, well, so what do you want me to do? How can I fix this? It's like, no, I don't want you to do anything. Just listen. Let's just talk it through. Okay. And again, active listening. It is a skill that we can certainly acquire, you know, and affirm what the other person is saying instead of like, really? Gee, wow, okay, that's interesting. No, you're kidding me. You know, all those like little pat responses where, you know, we're not making eye contact, we're fiddling with our phones or something, and we're not really paying attention. All right. So again, that is quality time. The third love language is the physical touch. Okay. And a person with this love language, they feel loved the most through physical affection. And this is aside from sex, okay? Those who have physical touch as their primary love language feel loved when their spouse or their partner shows affection in some way, like holding their hand out in public, or even holding a hand over dinner, or when you go to bed, just holding their hand or touching their arm, or, okay, listen up, people, giving them a massage at the end of the day. And they don't have to ask for it. They don't have to beg, like, can I get a back massage? You know, it's just something that it's either a little tense or something, or a foot massage or something. It's the physical touch that matters the most. And, you know, ironically, let's push this a little bit further, that, you know, a person with this kind of love language, you know, their idea, let's say, of a perfect date night might include just sitting on the couch, you know, cuddling, maybe with a glass of wine and a good movie, but they simply just want to be close to their partners physically. Okay. Now, let's come to acts of service. That when someone's primary love language is, you know, or I should say the acts of service, they feel loved and appreciated when people do nice things for them. Not in a manipulative, gee, it would be nice if you could do this for me someday, but when, you know, just out of the blue, you know, the simple things that somebody does for them, you know, whether it's helping with the dishes or putting gas in their car. You know, those little acts of service go straight to the person's heart. And they love when people do little things for them, and often can be found doing little things for others. I was working with a couple, and this is probably, you know, the most cutest thing that I had heard them say to each other. We were on the subject of love languages, and you know, her love language was this acts of service, like little things I can do for you. And what she had done was that whenever she would walk by and she would find her husband's cell phone, and she'd look at the battery, and if it was getting down there or something, she would always plug it in. And she would always make sure it was plugged in the night before, you know, just very quietly, just doing this. But she had no idea how this spoke to her husband. And he shared that. He said, "I just think it's really cute when I come out and my phone's plugged in, because I know that you plugged it in, because, you know, there's nobody else in the house except the two of them." And, you know, she was touched because, like, "I didn't think you ever noticed or appreciated that." And he goes, "Of course I do." And it was kind of like an aha moment for the couple, which really brought them closer together. So the last one, the last of these five love languages, is the one who really connects with giving and receiving gifts. And so to the person whose love language is in receiving gifts, gift giving is symbolic, you know, of love and affection in their heart and in their mind. You know, they treasure not only the gift, but also the time and effort that the gift giver put into it. Now, it's not that they expect a large gift or an expensive gift. It's more of what's behind the gift that really connects to them, that really just speaks volumes. Well, as I said, the five languages of love was and is a popular book that was published in 1992. And it's pretty straightforward. It just lays out the different characteristics in which we express and how we receive love. And it has helped thousands and thousands of couples improve their communication and intimacy and how they understand themselves. Yet, are there moments when we can transcend these love languages and tap into even higher dimensions of love? Absolutely. So after the break, we're going to be taking a closer look at how we can transcend our current understanding and connect to the higher dimensions of how love connects us to ourselves and to one another. Again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. Again, 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, just I want to say a quick word about next week's show. And as I mentioned earlier in this broadcast, that since September is Suicide Prevention Month, I want to take some time and talk about the mental and spiritual needs that families long to have met as they struggle with coming to terms with a loved one who has suicide ideation. Okay, there may have been suicide attempts in the past, but their loved one is struggling with the whole idea of whether or not to end their lives. So I invite you to tune in to the show next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, when I'll be talking about listening to the breadcrumbs, suicide's trail out of the dark woods. Well, as I mentioned early in the show, I was talking about September being Suicide Prevention Month and the launch of Given Hours Connect to Hope campaign with just multiple ways to learn and to get involved. And again, I just wanted to say that I'm also connected with this organization in providing just free mental health services and counseling to active duty personnel or retired personnel, reservists or guardsmen, and their families. Okay, but if you go on their website, you know, www.giveanhour.org, you'll find resources for accessing mental health care, a toolkit for sharing your own, you know, your own Connect to Hope story, and openings to join, you know, the network. And each one of us, as I said before, can play a role in becoming more knowledgeable about the signs of distress and prevention efforts. Okay. Well, let's return to the Five Languages of Love. And as I said, it was the book that was written back in 1992 by Dr. Gary Chapman. And, you know, I've just, as I've read this before, and I know my own love language, and I know my wife's, and so forth. You know, I often think, like, is there more to these five languages of love? Is there a way in which we can enhance them, or we can transcend them, I should say, to tap into higher dimensions of love? And of course, I got my answer. Absolutely. Okay. Because when we look at love and the five languages of love as energy, that takes it into a whole different realm. Okay, because everything we think of, everything we say, everything we do is energy. And unless we transform the energy through healing our own wounds, it's going to come back to us exactly how it went out from us. Okay, and this is a phenomenon I run into time and time again, counseling clients who want to heal from their past and improve their relationships. That whatever a person is struggling with from other relationships, more than likely they're struggling with the same issues in themselves. Because, you know, what negative energy is being sent out, it echoes back sooner or later. And this is how I explain it to kids. You know, I often say that we live in this big, giant echo. And of course they get that because they love to hear echoes. They think it's cool when they can shout in a tunnel or a cave or even into an empty tin can, and they hear their voice echoing back in their ears. And again, like I said, I just connect that with the energy that we send out, whether it's mental energy or emotional energy or, you know, psychological energy, physical energy, you know, spiritual energy, and so forth. It's like whatever we send out is going to return to us. And, you know, and this has nothing to do with one's religion per se. It's just a fact. This is just how the world has been made. And, you know, all cultures know this about energy. All cultures know this about, you know, whether you call it, you know, reaping what you've sown, or if you want to call it karma, or you want to give it another name. It's true. There's something about our actions that how we send it out or how we display whatever to another person, it's going to come back to us sooner or later. Okay. And I'm sure, you know, those of you who have been listening to this broadcast for some time, you know, where I stand on self-inflicted wounds. You know, it's something that I just keep seeing over and over again, that we just happen to be our own worst enemies. You know, that, you know, we want to heal from our wounds, but we never take into consideration you know, how we treat other people. You know, we want to be able to control our thoughts and have pure thoughts and so forth, but we never take a look at just what we say and how we say it to another person. Okay, and this whole concept of we live in this giant echo is true time and time again. It's just that energy of how something was sent out and to whom, and you know, and just the mental energy behind it and so forth will come back to us. And it often keeps us wounded instead of setting us free, and we can be in healthier relationships. Okay, so certainly everything we think about and we say and we do is energy. And unless we transform that energy through healing our own wounds, it's going to come back to us exactly as it went out. So, for example, a person who's filled with bitterness from a previous hurt in a relationship or a betrayal in a relationship will more than likely, if they haven't healed from this, they're going to feel everything and see everything perhaps from this lens of bitterness. Or a person who has experienced tremendous hurt from a broken trust in a relationship, you know, unless this is healed and transformed, more than likely they're going to view everything and everyone with suspicion. And this is very difficult for people to understand about the phenomena of emotional and psychological self-inflicted wounds. You know, what goes out has first come from within. All right. Did you hear that? What goes out has first come from within. So sometimes a person might say, you know, I will never forgive that person for, which typically means I'll never be able to forgive myself for, never. Or I could never trust another person because, well, this typically means I have difficulty at times trusting myself. Or I can't stand it when a person says this or they do this. Well, that usually means I can't stand myself when I say or do things. And just one more example here. I just can't love that person because usually also means that, well, I too struggle with loving myself. You know, how we are with others is often how we are with ourselves, and vice versa. You know, how we see each other is often how we see ourselves. And unresolved or unhealed wounds distort how we view and interact with the world. Well, in his work, The Analysis of the Self, I'm sure you've heard the name Heinz Kohut. He's a psychologist, and he defines the self as a person's psychological being, you know, which is made up of sensations and feelings and thoughts and attitudes towards, you know, ourselves and the world. And according to his model of self-psychology, Kohut understood our ability to overcome many, many issues in our lives as stemming from an underdeveloped sense of who we are. Okay. You know, moreover, not only are we simply not aware of who we are, but also we're not aware of what inner gifts and beauty and strengths we possess. And the external objects in our lives have been substituted for what we really desire in relationships then, which is love, acceptance, peace, intimacy, nurturing, courage, and so forth. But yet, how many times do we settle for far, far less? Okay, so Kohut understood just humanity in general. You know, just the reason why we get stuck in our issues is because, you know, this all stems from just simply not knowing who we are, or as he put it, as an underdeveloped sense of who we are. And I tell you what, I love that language that he uses. An underdeveloped sense of who we are, which tells me there is great potential in everybody to understand who they are and to develop a sense of who they are. And yet, how many times do we say things out of ignorance, or we act out of ignorance, or even, you know, our thoughts are just out of ignorance? Because if we could truly see and understand how, you know, the energy works behind what we say or do or think, we walk around many times wounding a lot of people, and we wound ourselves. But just imagine, if we have that capacity within us to wound emotionally, psychologically, physically, even spiritually wound people, there's also great potential in us to, through a transformed energy, to provide that healing. And to be able to send out, let's say, through these five languages of love, you know, just a stronger, more powerful energy that actually transforms lives and not only helps ourselves in just discovering who we are, but also helps others. Okay. And, you know, like I said, you know, a lot of times we just settle for something far, far less because, well, it's just not worth the work, or I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to get out from under this, or I've been hurt so many times in my life, I'm just giving up hope, or whatever it might be. Okay. But deep down inside, when you strip away everything else, what people really long for, I mean, the deep depth cry of their soul is to be loved, to be accepted, to have peace, to have that intimacy, nurturing, courage, so on and so forth. These are the things that we cannot put a price tag on, but how many times do we settle for a particular price? And we just say, okay, whatever. All right. So in order to develop a healthy sense of who we are, a healthy self, you know, we are then required at some time in our lives to internalize, you know, the qualities of, let's say, the external objects in our lives. Okay. And think of it this way, that if we grew up with a favorite stuffed animal or toy, okay, we learned the value of comfort, fun, companionship, whatever it was that that toy provided. And the reason such objects connect with us is because they meet this inner emotional and psychological need. You know, and although this is a normal behavior in childhood, as we mature, as we get older, we internalize these qualities and we end up substituting the stuffed animal or the toy for more meaningful emotional, physical, and let's say even sexual intimacy in relationships with others. Okay. And if we're unable to do this, we're going to struggle to be able to reciprocate these human qualities in meaningful, life-giving ways. Now, if any of you out there have seen the movie Ted, you know, T-E-D, Ted. It was, I think, came out in 2012. It's a classic example of, you know, how people, you know, how they struggle to just move from an underdeveloped sense of who they are towards a healthy self. Okay, so spoiler alert, in this film, you know, John Bennett, he's a 35-year-old man-child. Okay. At the beginning of the movie, he receives his childhood wish in making his teddy bear, or Ted, talk. Okay. And come to life. And growing up, Ted served as a great companion. He was a confidant to John, and he showed John unconditional love and so forth. But unfortunately, John never internalized those qualities that he received from Ted. And as a result, he struggled to find meaning in his relationship with his girlfriend, Lori, unless Ted was around. Okay. So many people also look at the external objects in order to satisfy those inner stirrings of the soul. So whether they are objects that provide pleasure or happiness or comfort, security, and or peace, they can never touch the cry of the soul and the cry of the soul's consciousness that connects us with God. I mean, these objects, as I said before, are simply poor substitutes that on one level serve to meet our emotional and physical needs. But yet, the reason why we cling to external objects is because on one level, they work. And again, here's another example to kind of drive this point home. Alcohol is a depressant, and it calms emotional anxiety and stress. If it didn't do that, who would drink, right? Cocaine is a stimulant, and it boosts mental and physical energy. And again, if cocaine didn't do that, what's the point of taking it? And even, you know, with talking in the context of intimacy, you know, and just, you know, how that releases dopamine in the brain and provides a nice physiological sense of elation and or even a lengthy workout releases endorphins and provides us with this analgesic feeling, just this nice, wonderful, perfect. Yet, on the other hand, if we truly want to understand ourselves as soul, we must learn that these external objects always point us to connect with a higher consciousness that transcends our emotional, psychological, and physical realms. In fact, as we listen to the cry of the soul, I hope we realize our deepest desire is to connect and reconnect to the purest sense of who we are. In fact, this cry of the soul is so powerful, so deafening, that once we fully embrace ourselves, we're never going to be satisfied with anything less. You know, years ago, I in one of the mental health offices where I worked, hung this framed quote from the family therapist, Virginia Satir. And Virginia Satir lived, I think it was like early 1900s, 1915, 1916, and she had died in 1988. And, you know, I'll just read to you this quote. And she says, "I want to love you without clutching. I want to appreciate you without judging. I want to join you without invading. I want to invite you without demanding. I want to leave you without guilt, criticize you without blaming, and help you without insulting. And if I can have the same from you, then we can truly meet each other." Well, day after day, I passed by this quote and I never really stopped to read it. You know, you look at something day after day, but you never read it, okay, let alone understand its impact on relationships, both within and outside of, you know, counseling relationships. So one day I was just eating my lunch, minding my own business. I read and reread that quote slowly. And I remember thinking to myself, "Ooh, that's a powerful saying, but that's far too demanding. Too many conditions, too many changes would be required of people to reach this." In fact, I assumed it's so unrealistic to place this kind of pressure on another person and expect them to keep their part of the bargain. Well, in counseling and pastoral settings, I've witnessed too many people, including myself, making excuses for not wanting to be authentic in relationships. You know, they say things like, "I've been hurt. I'm never going to open my heart to anyone ever again. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. She hurt my feelings," or "You broke my heart," or "You let me down again," or "Well, God, you didn't answer my prayers the way I wanted you to answer them," you know, and so on and so on and so on. And yet, Virginia Satir's words just pursued me like a shadow I couldn't outrun. And little did I realize that I was actually reading her goals for her own life. See, she was born, you know, in 1915, 1916, and you know, clearly she was ahead of her time. And, you know, but instead of viewing humanity's problems as stemming from the popular belief back in her day, which called everything neurosis, she believed problems were the result of how people were unprepared to cope with life's challenges because they dealt with every situation in life from a place of woundedness instead of a place of healing and authenticity. You see, Satir also believed that people are equipped with the capacity for growth and transformation. And as a result, she not only dedicated her life to helping people find their true inner selves, but also empowered them to live more congruent, genuine lives. I mean, plain and simple, she saw potential in people and the potential for people to be able to see themselves as they ought to be seen and to heal from those psychological, emotional, physical, and even spiritual wounds. And it's still ironic, even to this day, that authenticity is often a foreign concept to many people. On one hand, they may know all too well nothing but brokenness in their lives. You know, broken dreams, broken promises, broken relationships, even physical brokenness. And yet, on the other hand, despite not knowing what to call it, people are attracted to that authenticity and that genuineness and desperately want more of it in their relationships. You know, because if truth be told, we often approach and sustain relationships because of what we can get out of them. You know, we may see a person and think how they can serve us instead of how we might be able to meet a need in them. And this, again, brings us all back to having the courage to reclaim our gifts, our graces, our strengths, our love, etc., that we've already come into the world with. Because, and this also helps us transcend into higher dimensions, these things do not necessarily belong to us exclusively. In other words, the gifts and the talents and the graces and the strengths and everything, you know, how we're equipped and what we come into the world with are meant for somebody else. Okay, just sit with that one for the rest of your life. Okay, and just, you know, let's consider how we're doing with that. Okay, but, you know, our gifts and our talents and so forth are always meant for another person, so that we can be in relationships from a place of healing and wholeness instead of a place of woundedness. Well, you've been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I am your host, Dr. James Houck. Thank you for spending this time with me. I invite you to tune in next week as we take a look at how survivors, surviving loved ones of those who have completed suicide are doing. And that show is entitled Listening to the Breadcrumbs, Suicide's Trail Out of the Dark Woods. So until next time, everybody be safe. Have a good Labor Day weekend, and I'll talk to you next Friday. Take care.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific time on PBS Radio TV.